Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, December 27th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A major gear group is pushing back against rules set to take effect this January that will put human observers aboard some smaller fishing boats. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association has enlisted the help of the state's congressional delegation to try and delay implementation of the observer program for small boats and to adopt a more efficient electronic monitoring program instead. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The fisheries that take place in federal waters off of Alaska's coast have had onboard human monitors for years. The monitors provide critical data on the number and species of fish coming over the rail and are particularly important in counting bycatch, king salmon and halibut, for example, which are caught unintentionally by large trawlers dragging their nets for pollock. The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council voted to restructure the observer program 2 years ago, so fishermen have known that the halibut fleet and boats under 57.5 feet would be included beginning in 2013. Boats under 40 feet will be included a year after that. That's a lot of boats, about 1,300, which don't have a lot of room to spare for an extra person. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association has spent the past couple of years developing an alternative to an observer's eyes. Linda Benkin is the executive director of ALFA.
A camera, which is what electronic monitoring involves, is hooked up on a boat. When you start hauling gear, the camera turns on automatically, and it doesn't care if you have to sit around and wait for weather. It doesn't have to be fed, doesn't have to be put up in a hotel, flown into towns. Just gets the data the agency needed.
With funding from the National Fish and Wildlife Association, ALFA developed a pilot project to test the effectiveness of electronic monitoring on small boats in both Homer and in Sitka. Data analysts could successfully identify around 95% of the fish landed on the test boats. The daily cost of electronic monitoring was roughly half that of a human observer. Benkin says they've even accounted for the possibility that someone might try and game the system.
Intended from the start was if someone purposely obstructs the view of the camera when they have a camera on their boat, they stand in front of it, they don't wipe the lens, if it gets splattered so the picture's not good, well then your next trip you're going to get a human observer. So in a way the human was the stick and the electronic monitoring to our view was the carrot.
Despite the promising results from the 10 boats in the study, NOAA Fisheries this fall announced that it would be moving ahead with restructuring the observer program using its human model beginning January 1st. ALFA sought and received the help of Alaska's congressional delegation. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich and Representative Don Young all signed a letter on December 10th to Rebecca Blank, acting Secretary of Commerce, asking NOAA to hold off on deploying human observers on the small boat fleet until an option for electronic monitoring is possible. All other aspects of the restructuring should move forward, including the 1.25% assessment on the fleet to pay for the program.
We understood that the longline, the sablefish halibut fleet, would be paying the lion's share of the cost of this restructured program. We would be paying 67% of the cost. And we were hesitant but willing to shoulder that burden if we could get two things. One, better coverage where we have a lot of concerns about salmon and halibut bycatch, and two, a program that worked for the small fleet, namely electronic monitoring. And at this point, we're still shouldering that big lion's share of the cost, but to our mind, we haven't achieved either of those two goals.
Benkin says that because electronic monitoring seemed a likely course of action, the full costs of a human observer program were never fully assessed for the small boat fleet. And while this could be grounds for future litigation on the issue, she thinks there is an even stronger environmental case that observer coverage under the proposed restructuring plan is insufficient to protect stocks of halibut and black cod. Reporting in Sitka with help from Ed Ronco, I'm Robert Woolsey.
You can view the results of ALFA's electronic monitoring pilot study and read the letter from Alaska's congressional delegation to the Secretary of Commerce at our website, kcaw.org. Sitka-based Silver Bay Seafoods has acquired property in Bristol Bay for a new processing operation there. The company plans to sell shares in the operation to raise the $25 million needed for construction. Beginning in 2014, Silver Bay hopes to process large portions of the Bristol Bay Driftnet salmon fishery and the Togiak Sakuro herring fishery. KDLG's Mike Mason reports.
The first announcement that Silver Bay Seafoods was planning to open a processing facility in Bristol Bay came in late November on the Deck Boss blog run by veteran Alaska journalist Wesley Loy. The company has apparently purchased 8 acres of industrial zone property on the Naknek River adjacent to the Leader Creek Seafoods facility. The company plans to construct a high-volume processing plant on that land that will have the daily capacity to process and freeze 2.4 million pounds of salmon and 900 tons of herring. To pay for construction of the plant, Silver Bay Seafoods is offering to sell ownership interest for $25,000 for each 0.1% of the new company called Silver Bay Seafoods Naknek LLC. The news that a new seafood processor is coming to the Bay has been met with enthusiasm by many stakeholders in the Bay's commercial salmon fishery, including the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation, which is the community development quota organization for Bristol Bay. Robin Samuelson is a commercial fisherman and the CEO of BBEDC.
The processing capacity of Bristol Bay is way down from 10, 20 years ago, and it's good to see a fresh company like Silver Bay come into Bristol Bay to process salmon and pay fishermen a fair price. We own 50% of Ocean Beauty. It has a major plant in Naknek. I have joy that Silver Bay is coming in and going to compete with us, and the fishermen are going to benefit.
Silver Bay Seafoods notes that the ownership offering is primarily intended for investors who own or operate refrigerated vessels participating in the Bristol Bay salmon driftnet fishery. Silver Bay points out that the offering price of $25,000 per 0.1% is based on a $25 million capitalization for the new company. Silver Bay is purchasing a minimum ownership interest of 60% in the new company for $15 million. The new processing facility in Naknek is scheduled to be up and operating in May of 2014, and the initial $25 million is expected to cover the actual cost of the real estate and the costs associated with building the new processing facility. Apparently, Silver Bay Seafoods has already put up over $2 million to purchase the land for the new facility. In the prospectus, Silver Bay Seafood says they will meet or exceed the highest ex-vessel grounds price and provide large-volume, reliable tenders. The new company will apparently be led by a 5-person board of representatives. Silver Bay Seafoods is a relatively new player in the seafood processing industry in Alaska, and it currently runs facilities in Sitka, Craig, and Valdez. A high percentage of the seafood is apparently sold to international buyers for reprocessing and distribution into the Asian, European, and U.S. markets. Currently, over 70% of Silver Bay Seafoods is owned by 125 member fishermen. The company was founded in 2006, and this past season, the company recorded its 6th consecutive profitable year, and the company distributed $7 million in profit-sharing payments to fishermen. Silver Bay Seafoods apparently plans to have a fishing fleet capable of harvesting 18% of the annual driftnet harvest in Bristol Bay, and they hope to be able to buy 30% of the annual Togiak Sakuro herring harvest. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
A Ketchikan woman slipped on a log and fell into Connell Lake while fishing Saturday. She was rescued by a couple companions who also became chilled and required the assistance of Alaska State Troopers. KRBD's Layla Carey reports.
Karina Coggins was balanced on a log next to Connell Lake, casting her line when she lost her footing and plunged into the frigid water. She was able to return to shore fairly quickly with help from her two companions, but they inadvertently punctured their inflatable raft. With daylight fading and no boat, the three built a small fire and called for help. Alaska State Troopers say the emergency call came in at around 4 p.m. Saturday. Jerry Kiefer of the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad says they sent a crew on foot down the trail that goes around the lake and launched a skiff in case the victims were too far from the trail.
They were a fair distance away from the end of the trail, so we elected to utilize the inflatable raft to bring the victims back across and then deliver them to a North Tongass ambulance.
The 2.5-mile trail goes around Connell Lake, then follows a creek that connects Connell to Talbot Lake. Kiefer says the three victims were on the far side of Connell, across the mouth of the creek. He says they were right to call for help rather than walk out on the trail. All three, Coggins, a man, and a young boy, had gotten wet and cold.
Of course, when you're out using rafts and fishing along the lake, staying completely dry is fairly impossible. The victim that went into the water, of course, she was completely wet. Her partner was, wet in, in the effort of getting her out. And then the other male juvenile, he was wet just from, being a kid and being out and playing at the lake.
Kiefer suggests that anyone planning outdoor recreation trips borrow one of the KVRS spot locator beacons, which allow rescue personnel to pinpoint the location of someone in trouble. He says the trio was lucky to have had cell coverage at the lake, and a beacon would have been more reliable.
This country is extremely unforgiving, and really the simple trip across the lake to do some fishing in the wintertime can be a lot more hazardous than the typical trip down south where you can get a hold of emergency services anywhere.
Troopers report that all three victims were transported by North Tongass EMS to Ketchikan Medical Center for treatment of mild hypothermia. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Alaska environmental regulators are responding to two fishing boats that sank south of Homer, possibly weighed down after heavy snow. The Department of Environmental Conservation says a 100-foot by 100-foot sheen was spotted around the site where the boat sank sometime between Monday night and Tuesday in Jokoloff Bay, 12 miles south of Homer. The sinking was discovered by occupants of a passing vessel Tuesday afternoon. Stephen Russell with the DEC says the boats were anchored together and lying on top of each other, making one visible. The DEC says the owner of the boats estimates the vessel Leading Lady had about 50 gallons of diesel fuel and 35 gallons of hydraulic fluids and lube oils on board, while the vessel Kuprianov had none. Area oyster farm owners have been notified. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Quick look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, snow in the morning, becoming rain in the afternoon. Snow accumulation to 2 inches with highs around 38. Tonight, rain with lows around 36. You're listening to KCAW Sitka.